Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. Lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go.
Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT.
Go, now go.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. This is Sunday, May the 20th, 2018, and this is the Prairie Monk program, WEFT's weekly look at nature and conservancy and nature conservancy and rails, trails, greenways. And I could not help but notice coming in today that we need to talk a little bit about the Pocket Prairie.
So, yes. So you have an announcement you just pulled off to all. You might like to say something about
it. Sure, and I'll probably mention this again at the end. Amazon's concerts, spring concerts, are this weekend. This is Nevertheless She. Every piece that they're doing this weekend was written by a woman. In fact, one of the pieces was written by Megan Smith, a former conductor of Amazon. So the concert today will be at 4 o'clock this afternoon. It is at the McKinley Presbyterian Church, which is at 5th and John Street. They do request a donation, but they will not turn anybody away for not having the money to make any kind of a donation.
Very interesting concert, always.
I love going. I always go to one of the concerts every single semester that they have these. So I'll mention it again at the end as a reminder.
So, yes, as David mentioned already, Pocket Prairie. It's interesting. We're working with poor people. This is Pour Your Own Beer, and it's you are going to have a brewery there in the building next to our Pocket Prairie, and next across the road from WEFT. It's going to be a computerized brewery with lots of different ales that you can take a 2-ounce sample, and if you like it, then you can pour your own and take a glass of beer and walk it out onto what has been the Pocket Prairie. So we have negotiated to try and leave a little of the prairie because some of us have been there for 30-odd years and it's well established, and its roots are into terraces that are hard to get the plants out of. And we've come to the conclusion that it's not practical to do that. So it will be a place for camaraderie and music. And so we're pleased that this is coming because Market Street has had a varied life, and this is helpful. Part of working on the building is that it closes the street, which is convenient for us. I watched concrete people filling in a gap that had been made for utilities, and I was intrigued by the people who were doing the concrete work. Very skilled, and that was finished, and it takes time to dry, so the street is cut off while that section of concrete dries. It's a little difficult to have concrete in a brick street, and Market Street is a brick street. You can tell it's a brick street because it has cracks in the pavement, and that's because bricks move and they settle on sand. And that cracks the asphalt that's on top. It has happened that Historic people have more recently been putting in a concrete street just because that is the modus operandi at the present time. But then they put sand on top of that, and then they put the bricks back. So that means that the bricks don't move as in the past. If you had the same cartwheel parking on the same set of bricks, then the set of bricks wears down, and you have to have manual labor to take that brick up and sprinkle some more sand underneath it, turn it over, and so it will wear in a different manner, and that's the way it was. But it's costly in terms of having to deal with manual labor. These days you work with a front-end loader or other equipment that will deal with taking out the bricks and replacing it with concrete. If you don't take out completely, then there's the risk that the bricks will fall gradually into their traditional matrix, and the concrete won't. So you get a little bump there, and sometimes it can be a considerable bump. But that's been a perpetual problem for many years in urban settings. Some communities that want brick streets are prepared to pay for the labor that would go to replacing the hole that you dig for utilities with bricks rather than with concrete. But concrete is much more professional, and that's what's likely to happen. I noticed that there were paving bricks coming out, so I said to the person that was in charge of the hole, could we have those? Well, they said, well, you have to do it in 30 minutes. So I stacked up a bunch of pavers, and then the truck came, and the broken bricks and asphalt and other things were going into the truck. So I quickly called Packer, and they said they would take them. So we came back, and Packer's just up the road on Washington Street. And yeah, so the truck, instead of going to a different dump where the pavers would probably be mixed up with a lot of junk that is too costly to dig for salvage, I went to Packer, and by the time the truck was leaving, the people were already lining up the bricks and noticing the Danville sign that was imprinted on them. They usually have been kilned with some more salt than normal bricks so that they won't absorb quite as much water when it rains. Paving bricks are very different from housing bricks that you use for building. So that meant that the street is blocked off, but it's a street that is used quite a bit. During the day, we had a film crew here, and they were trying to integrate with what we were trying to do, which was move a prairie. And so let's look at the prairie now, and we've probably moved about half of it. We have a modest-sized hi-ho, and that has allowed us to creep into the prairie and dig up clumps of plants. The prairie often is designed in terms of clumps. We've had a lot of support so far. We can use more. And we've had several people who have had the temerity to drive the backhoe or the hi-hoe. And so let me say something about that piece of equipment. It was delivered on Friday, and we had other things to do to prepare the work for it. So we took out a lot of hackberry plants and things that didn't belong. And by Saturday, we were into using it. It's got a lot of mechanisms to it. It's on Cleatrex. And when you have Cleatrex, the way you steer something, whether it's a tank or a bulldozer, you lock one Cleatrex and the other one moves around. It's always bothered me a little bit that that's how you steer this equipment, because it's very rough on the territory underneath. If you see where a bobcat has been, you'll see that the land underneath is kind of disturbed. To avoid that, they've made it so that if you have the Cleatrex running in one direction, then the cab can move around, so you can take your backhoe around without having to move your Cleatrex. You don't have to turn the machine around by this method of locking one set of Cleatrex and moving in a different direction. No. There are other attributes. You have a bucket, and the bucket can go up and down. It can go sideways, left and right. You can take the bucket and move it so that its point is vertical and it's going into the soil. You can make that cup so that you can load bricks into it. So these variables are, if you don't drive a bobcat or these pieces of equipment every day, it takes you a little while, probably half an hour, to learn how it operates. And obviously, if we are neophytes, you don't have the sophistication of people who use this equipment every day. They can get to within a quarter of an inch of a spot and be very accurate with it. So there's a lot of talent that goes with these pieces of equipment that we don't have, but this is quite adequate for us. And on Saturday, we moved through the trees. There was a forest that was a simulation of a prairie forest, and it's actually been dying because it has a disease called thrip. It's an entomological thing. It's an insect that gets into roses mainly. Gardeners know it from roses, but it also gets into service berries, which have been our simulated forest. It leaves cracks in the stems, and the stems die. So some of the trees are still alive, and some of them we have been taking out. So when you do that, you have to watch where the branches of the tree goes, because there's a power line that goes across there to what used to be a small billboard. So you have to have clippers to make sure that you can liberate the area, and you have to watch overhead. And you have to watch, there's a slope in Pocket Prairie, and that means you do have to keep on the high line and keep the weight of the building, the machine, up high. It can stretch down low, but when you do stretch it out, you have to know that there's a weight on the end of the arm, and that can move the prime mover. So there's a lot of little techniques about it. It can be used by men and women, because it's hydraulic and electronic, and it's organization, so you don't have to be a 200-pound person to use this machine. There are locks so that you put a seatbelt on. There's usually a canopy over it that is also a prevention. If it rolls, then there are roll bars that mean that you don't lose your life when the machine runs over, which happens. There are usually headlights so you can work at night. There's It's just a very convenient item, and we're glad to have it for the weekend. We're due to be out of there by Monday. We've still got a lot of work to do. We've had a lot of people over on the site where we're taking it to, and there are some limitations about that. It's in a detention pond, and we've chosen a site which is fairly low. And I regret that a little bit, because I realize that in a 5-inch rainfall, that site will be covered. That's not unusual for prairie. The prairie grew very well. The Grand Prairie of East Central Illinois was around Rantoul and Flatville, and it was swampy, and Champaign County was swampy. But it's a different sort of swamp than if you have a roaring five-inch rain. And the whole purpose of the detention pond is to accumulate water and let it out slowly so it doesn't cause this canyon on the way through Campustown and Urbana. It used to be that on Green Street you could row a boat or a canoe, and nobody's basements were effective because the water would flood. And this helps to collect various tributaries, and it's referred to as the Big Dig. It's technically the Second Street Detention Pond, and it's very deep. It has a pond, a huge pond, and then the boneyard comes into it, and the boneyard comes down in a little stream. And that's significant because the ducks especially have enjoyed it. The geese also enjoy it, and they are fairly active to the point that they eat the vegetation that's on the sides. It's seemingly, fortunately, there's a bridge across, and Logan or Stoughton or one of those streets, and that ends the pond. The boneyard runs into it, and most of these birds, ducks especially, need landing space, and they need to take off space, and they enjoy to move around in a pond and dig for stuff in the mud. Those creatures tend to be in the pond. So we put our prairie a little north of that after the bridge, and there's a Boneyard Creek right alongside, and that provides us with water. The soil was seemingly fairly fertile. It's dark and got some organic matter. We had a choice of taking the lawn grass off of it, and we could have cultivated it. It probably would have been sensible to do. But one of the things about prairie is that it likes, or it has gotten used to being fairly firm ground. And that's helpful to us, because if the prairie is in firm ground, the weeds, the local farm weeds and urban weeds, usually like a disturbed area, and a fertile area, and so we try to avoid having weeds for 10 years by having firm ground. But the ground is kind of more firm than we thought, and so a little bit of cultivation would have helped. This is hindsight for us. We don't move a prairie every week, so We don't know all the parameters, but it might be that in the future we might have a prairie a little higher, and these plants might be transplantable. You know, 3-10 years time, if they subject to flooding that is too aggressive for the plants. It's not a swampland. In a flood time, the plant is totally inundated. Now, cultivar people who take the prairie plants and develop them have changed that some. In the case of switchgrass is a grass that stays up over winter, and so it's good for pheasants. And Pheasants Forever and other organizations plant switchgrass fairly liberally. The birds can put their eggs in there, they're protected by the fruiting bodies staying up, whereas big blue stem and Indian grass, the fruiting bodies drop. And cordgrass is in a sort of damper situation. Little blue stem doesn't get very high. But the cultivar people, when you take these plants and that are perennial and have a long flowering season with small flowers, then you can annualize them by creating a bigger and a better flower by breeding, and one that comes to head at a certain time, so you get a show of flowers at a certain time. You might do that. You see Echinacea, for instance, the local purple coneflower is fairly wimpy and its petals hang down. If you take that plant and breed it, you can have a perennial plant. They're both perennial, but you can have a shrub-like plant with lots of very purple flowers, and they flower for a longer period. And so you can do that. You can take 50 years of perhaps 50 agronomists or horticulturists to breed that, and often as volunteer people who just get to be excited about roses or what have you, and spend their lifetime belonging to horticultural societies and improving plants. So in our case, if you had switchgrass, you can choose varieties of switchgrass that are now very able to stand up under 8 inches of water.
Wow.
Or 8 days of water. So we can do simulation with some of these sorts of cultivars, but basically the prairie wasn't underwater in that manner for a long period of time. But, so as we work with these things, you get to handle the ideas around them and know a little bit more about the genetics. Somebody was just asking me, do we have New Jersey tea? And, well, no, the soil we have on the pocket prairie is very poor soil. It was soil that was put over a landfill in early settlement days. That little corner and that little battle-axe-shaped block, it's probably about 30 feet wide and about 100 feet long, was a landfill. And they had a pillbox at the front, and you paid so much and dumped your material. It wasn't going to be cars and things like that. It was in the horse-drawn era. And so, but it's kind of junky soil. Now, that's okay. We've been using it, but certain prairie species that really like a better soil don't find it easy to fit into that location. Some of them are also liking a lot of sunlight, and we have buildings that don't prevent the sun, but they cast a shadow, and some plants you can tell them that they lean out. The history of this site was interesting. It was two billboards about 30 feet long each, and they didn't meet the more recent federal legalities of how big you can have a sign close to a federal highway, which is University Avenue. So they were grandfathered in for 10 years. Grandfathered means that you can go by the rule of the game that you were going by for 10 years, and then you have to change. And the billboards were taken out, and a smaller billboard went in. That left a site that gathered urban weeds, and it wasn't the greatest site, but we asked to put a pocket prairie in there, and that was okay with the owner, Dr. Youngerman. And so we've had that site there for over 30 years. So the plants now have found their roots, and the roots are in terraces. The Pope family that owned the billboards they do a lot of augmenting of the billboards, so it just doesn't look like a bare billboard. It has vegetation around it. And they'd put in a quite expensive set of three terraces that could be vegetated. And so that was a very cooperative thing to do from an urban point of view. Eventually, the parking lot next door was fenced off, and our prairie was behind it, a little bit private. We got the fence to be 2 feet lower than it might have been, and there was a little trail that went around, and it didn't go to Chester Street. It bent back and came to Market Street. It had some existing trees, mainly a hackberry tree, which we're kind of reserved about because it has enough roots to lift a building up and down. There's also a fast-growing catalpa tree, and that was handy to us because in early settlement times, women especially were impressed by the prairie. They liked its flowers. They wrote poetry. If you go to the university library, you can find transcripts of that sort of interest in prairie. The farmer, on the other hand, was interested in the soils underneath and pasture for cattle or agricultural use for corn and soybeans. And so often, when the last piece of prairie was being taken out, a catalpa tree was given because it has nice white blooms, it grows quickly, and it has these fantastic long pods that you can put pipe cleaners into and make interesting animals. It's just, so we have a couple of catalpa trees there. There's one that's rather young. If anyone wants a catalpa tree, there's the opportunity. And it's doing well. So we're walking around. We're looking at, this morning I'm looking at the partially demolished prairie. And there's a lot of bricks that we put in as a pathway, put in with scouts. And they made a nice little rustic pathway. I was asked, where did the bricks come from? Well, they were what called job lots. And then what was the question of what is a job lot? Well, when you have a building and you overestimate the number of bricks you need, then you may have some left over, and it's a small enough lot that it doesn't always sell very well because it's just too few bricks. So we had several job lots that are out there. They have holes through them so the water can flow through them. actually the plants can grow out of them, and we're salvaging those. They're not paving bricks. They're more modern bricks, and we might take those to the Pope Prairie in Rantoul, because we have a little stream and it's kind of wet underfoot to get across it from time to time. So a little pathway would make it possible to have stepping stones. But we haven't decided that for real. To get them there, we need someone with a trailer. If you're out there and you got a trailer or a pickup truck, we could use it. So the bricks have to come out here, and it's helpful. The more modern bricks are fairly delicate, so if you run over the top of them with a backhoe or other equipment, and they're likely to break. So you open up a section and gradually take the bucket, and it's got tines on it, and you move the bricks and lift them out. The other way is to put your bucket in and drag them, and that's not quite so successful for the bricks, because they tend to break a little, and they're mixed up with soil, so in order to harvest them, you have to fish them out. So we've had both ways of doing things, and Karen is out there at the moment doing it by hand, taking paving bricks out in a place where we couldn't get with a high hoe. And those bricks are sort of bricks that Packer will sell for something like 50 cents a piece. Mm. And many people have enjoyed that sort of opportunity. The cities have bought bricks often to fill in brick streets, and sometimes they have some left over. Sometimes the street is converted over to concrete. Bus lines that use streets heavily will end up being made into a concrete or asphalt street, and the bricks will come up. And PACA, the Preservation and Conservation Association, and Bob Swisher and his team has done a good job of picking up those sorts of bricks. Sometimes they're mixed with other items that come out of a dead street, and you need to sort the bricks out. So if the bricks are already sorted out, and sometimes they've got some lime associated with them, then if they're clean, you pay a little bit more. You might pay 75 cents for a brick. But so we have our bricks. We also have a moraine out there, a simulated moraine with glaciated rocks, and some of those are rather heavy, so we will move those too, and they will probably go to the Second Street Detention Pond Prairie, and we'll have to sort out a name for it. The city's already interested in some signage to explain it, and we hope that the rocks the glaciated rocks are fairly valuable, because by the time you got a glacier from Canada, the house size blocks, things that are very big, would drop out and drop through the ice, and they're more likely to be in Canada. By the time you get to Illinois and a terminal moraine, most of the rocks have fallen out. So if you want to have a 4 foot by 3 foot glaciated rock with rounded surfaces, it's going to cost you $200 or $300, because there's not many of them. And if you dig in your backyard and find one, it's worth money. The big dig couldn't really afford that sort of glacial rock. So most of the big dig is sedimentary rock from Wisconsin, which is much different. It's not what we would have locally, but it provides an atmosphere for waterfalls and for plants growing in between the cracks and whatnot. And it's remarkably cheaper than a glaciated rock. But I think the prairie goes with the glaciation, and so we'll take the rock and put it in place, and we'll... So I walked around and photographed this morning. We had people working on the site, big dig site, and that was hard work. And we had two vehicles to take items. If you take a scoop, you can gently, once you've learned to use this machine, you face the bucket down, and then you try to scoop. And if you're a plant, you know whether it has deep roots or fibrous roots, and then you try to cup under that plant, and then we put it in a box. The boxes come from the comic shop just up the road, and they have very strong double row corrugations for comic books, and so they just ideal for putting a 1 foot by 1 foot dump of plant. When you get that scoop out, you might have a 3 foot portion, so you need to cut it in pieces at a logical location and drop it in. If you have a cardboard box underneath, you can collect and retain some of the soil that goes with the roots. And that's what we cart across to the big dig, and that gets planted in. And the boneyard runs by. It's a little creek. I watched yesterday as a dog was enjoying it. He was paddling all the way along that creek. Mm. And as we put things in, people were coming by to wonder what we're doing and why. And so I think it's very positive. This will be a site that will be maintained in the future. Mm. And people can visit it. And there will be a glaciated rock or two.
If people want to go see what you've transplanted over there, are there any landmarks you can point them to?
Oh, the top of the big dig starts at University Avenue. So if you go to Habitat and First Street, and just walk down the street to Second Street, you'll be seeing a portion which is rather interesting. It takes water from a slight rise there, and it has cardinal flowers in it. It has some of the grasses that are rather nice, and just an array of plants that I give credit to the city for organizing that, and I give credit to the people who are planting it, who know enough to put it there. So then we're not at that site where you have to walk along a little till you're behind Taylor Glass Works. If you come out on Logan, you can probably find your way around. Part of the reason for sorting that out is we didn't know what sort of transportation we'd have. And if you have a tandem truck, you have to know that it's very heavy. And if you take that sort of truck onto a lawn, you're likely to leave a 2-inch tread for years ahead. So you need a road that is built for such transportation. We probably fortunately didn't have to hire a tandem truck, so we have a little CRX which takes 4 or 5 boxes, and we also have a Chrysler, which will, it's a Chrysler Country style van, which will take boxes too. These plants wilt fairly quickly, so once you've trundled in and taken a spoonful of prairie and waddled back out, and it's been put in boxes, it starts to wilt. So if you put it in your vehicle and you don't move it immediately, the plants are beginning to wilt. So people were opening the doors of the van to give it wind to go past. But we got it as soon as we could. And some of the plants that we planted on Friday were waving their wooden leg and being positive. Their leaves were shiny. And I have hopes that that will be very good. It's a lot of work for people. And so if you're out there, if you can give us help, we need it, especially on the planting side. It takes sometimes 5 times the time to plant as it does to salvage. And then you need water. So we need buckets, and we go into the boneyard and pick out the water. And the water is not deep enough to provide you with a good puddle that you can put a 4-gallon drum into and pull out water. So we have to ladle water into a bucket, and so that keeps things alive. We're also looking at rain and hoping that we get stuff in, and it's been predicted that we have rain. We had a trickle this morning. It was only a spit, however. But it's been a cloudy day, it was hot yesterday, but we've got atmosphere that will make it possible. And it's kind of fun to do, and people talk to each other. So we talk about solar panels, and we talk about genomes. That's father and son talking to us. And we encounter people from the Master Naturalists who have a property at Sydney that come and would like to do something with a driveway. We have last night about, I would suspect about 10 o'clock, T.J. Blakeman came by just to see. He's a city planner, and he's had a lot to do with trying to organize this and getting us a site where we can move to. And he was kind of interested to see what was going on, and then he was going over to the Big Dig to see what we'd achieved so far, and he's interested in putting up some signs. Do we put a string around this? Do we put some sort of stronger fence that we've had at the Pocket Prairie? It's kind of intriguing to see the Pocket Prairie without a row of ropes to make sure that people keep on the pathway. So I was photographing this morning. I photographed these serviceberry plants themselves. The one that was dying was thrip, and the ones that were still alive. I went to the conversation area. It's kind of interesting. We had people to remove the conversation area seats. We had one seat there that has a back on it. It was bought by a volunteer, and it's amazing. It stayed there for many months of her. Well, on Friday night, I moved it out. It was ready to go. And by Saturday morning, it was back. There are people who have been wandering by and disappointed to see this site go, which means that it's positive that it was there. And so the seat went back. We brought it back again. And we have a question, which will then be, Do we put a seat in the prairie on the Big Dig? Will the same seat retain itself? Do we put an Osage Orange seat, or does the Osage Orange seat that we have get removed and used for heat for a homeless person in wintertime. It's very difficult to there's a yin and yang about park districts and forest preserves and pocket prairies. They're attractive to a lot of different people, and you don't want to say no to this, but there's a limit to what you can do. So I'm trying to figure out whether we take a fairly sophisticated little conversation area to the very site that we're at. Lots of thoughts. The plants are doing well. The beard's tongue is out. The grapes are forming. It's a wild grape. They're sour little creatures. So if you eat them, they're about a quarter of an inch big. You react to that. The blue stem is growing. The lead plant is nice, and it's got that gray sort of oxidized lead thing that gives it its name. The little trail is still there. The roses are not blooming yet. They're single roses, simple roses. One is a tall, erect rose, which is called a sunshine rose. The other is a prairie rose that is a runner, and you could pick it up and there'll be a run for 18 feet. There's compass plant, which we talk to all the time. It's an nth degree in drought resistance, and it's booming at the present time. It's rosin weed. A lot of these plants have a rosin that helps them to survive. The dock is doing well. And the birds are there. If we're lucky, I've been taking Vizio. We'll save some of the sound. But we usually have a cardinal out there that has two families a season. And the birds are going to miss what we've had. We sometimes have goldfinches and other birds that somehow find this rather secret site. That we also have people who came Friday night that had heard our advertisements for getting volunteers, and they decided that they hadn't ever seen the Pocket Prairie, and they arrived to see the last time. And if you want to see it for the last time, you're welcome to come, and you don't have to be a volunteer. Just get an idea of what the prairie is like.
Just disregard that no trespassing sign on the landing there.
Yeah. So there's tall coreopsis, which must be 2 feet high at the moment, and unfortunately it's succulent enough that it breaks off. So sometimes you have to, when you plant, you know that you've got leaves that are going to transpire water. So a kind thing to do is to cut it down to about 3 inches so the roots have time to get into action and bring back water to the leaves. It's just too much to expect a plant that has lost its roots to come back quickly. So pruning is helpful if you know what you're doing. Some plants probably don't appreciate it, and others do. We have to figure out whether we're going to take cup plant. Cup plants is kind of it's a silphium, and silphiums are these tall plants that get to be 8 and 10 feet tall, dock and compass plant. But one of their tribe is a cup plant, and it's intriguing because it has this cup, the leaves well together and make a little cup around the stem. But it's just a little on the aggressive side. It's okay. You can get rid of it, and I think we will take it. But we'll just warn the people who are maintaining it to watch it, because it can be aggressive. Even our own prairie plants can be aggressive. We don't usually encourage a lot of sunflowers because they can be aggressive, and they know how to spread. If you have a sawtooth sunflower that might be up to 18 feet tall sometimes. They really grow well. Well, that creature falls over and it gradually walks. So it grows again where it walks, and then it does the same the next year, and it can spread. So we are cautious, especially when I'm planting urban gardens. I don't give them, I've learned not to give people a lot of sunflowers, because they take over and they're aggressive enough that they die other more mild-mannered prairie plants. So if you have sunflowers, watch them. We have the mints. Bee balm is just a wonderful flower for bees of all type, but especially for bumblebees. And they're hardy. And you can tell them if you've dug up a plant and you're not sure what it is, you feel its stem, and it's a cross section is a square, and it has an engineering design. Sometimes we leave last year's fruiting bodies up just so people can see what a monada or bee balm or bergamot is, several different names for the same plant. But it would be very helpful if some of you would come and help. If you want to drive the hi-ho, that's an experience. It's like playing in a sand pit with a toy machine. It's a responsible machine. But then we need to plant, and so we need you over on the big dig, putting in plants, and you talk to each other, and you share this interest. It might be that you get convinced to put a solar panels on your roof because you're talking to each other. So you may come from Minnesota. You find out who's coming from where and what their interest is and why. And I think this has a twinkle in the eye for the people who to maintain this in the future. You have to work with workmen who are in genuine responsibility, feel that they have to mow weeds. But if you have a little prairie plot and it has a weed or two, and you go in with a mower to mow that weed, then the mower creates the weeds of mowing, the weeds that have rosettes, and they love to be mowed, like chicory. And so gradually your prairie gets to be smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, until it disappears completely. So there need to be people to explain that this is a prairie plot, and please, if you're going to weed it, you have to know your weeds and pull them out. And when you take out a weed, just don't take out the weed. You take your heel and you make that soil hard, because the weed likes it soft and the prairie likes it hard.
Right.
And that means that somebody has to know their weeds, and interestingly, they also have to know their prairie plants. So the people that are working there now have a knowledge of prairie plants they probably didn't have 2 days ago. Right. So please see if you can help us. That have a deadline by Monday. Then heavier equipment will come in, and we'll lose what we don't get out. We hope that won't be the case, but we've made a very genuine effort to indicate that we're getting out of there, and we appreciate what's happening with the business development. We hope it will succeed in many ways. It's taking an older building in Market Street and developing it and not destroying it. So we're also talking to the building next door, which is behind the Pocket Prairie, because it in itself is interesting. So just during the week, there has to be some consideration of electricity. So there has to be a transformer box somewhere, and sometimes those transformer boxes are 8 feet by 10 feet, because you can't have a transformer too close to the earth. You might just earth out. So there's a cooperation between the building to the north and the building to the south. And just to watch these people working on these sorts of situations is an education. I take photographs, and we're looking seriously at doing some blogs, because when I talk to you and go across various domains, it's not as simple and straightforward as a blog. So we're getting the messages. A blog with the pictures, and the pictures in the case of a blog need to be more along the lines of a series. If you're doing what our program does, we can only put in a occasional picture here and there, but sometimes the pictures are very important, and we're not really versed with the details of which sort of blog and why and how to get this underway. But we'll learn. We also have to learn about our database. We have over 1,000 names of people who could work with us, and we're not in a position where we can go and say these 10 people could be proselytized right now. So we've had a suggestion this week to use a thing called MasterChimp. It's a program that's designed to help you work with your database. So we need people who do that sort of thing. I'm looking at my time here to see.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. So, yes, so there's a lot of just to do this, we have had 6 weeks of notice. But 6 weeks of notice, if you're going to work with people that are going to help you, and they belong to organizations, it's going to take 2 months of meeting to sort it out. And if there's a debate about whether you're going to get help or not get help, then that might take 2 months of a meeting. So these things don't happen quickly. You might note that the Kickapoo Trail took 20 years to get into action. We don't hope to have that sort of delay. But things don't happen quickly, so don't get disappointed if things don't happen immediately. David's got a note in front of him, and it's about the Amazon. So why don't you say something about it? I'll close out, I think. This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT, Champaign. Please come and help us if you can. We'll be there probably until 8 o'clock.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. When can people come over? Like pretty much any time?
Any time. We'll usually have enough people around that they will make use of the people who come. And my phone number is 840-1911. And that will get me. And if I'm at the Big Dig, I'll come over and pick you up or sort you out. And thank you to all those that have already helped.
Thanks to all of those. And yes, I will mention one more time that Amasong has one final performance of their spring concert. The spring concert is called Nevertheless She. That's based on the women's movement, Nevertheless She Persists. All of the music in today's concert was written by women. And so the concert starts at 4 p.m. It is at the McKinley Presbyterian Church. That's at the corner of 5th Street and John on the U of I campus. They do request a donation from anyone who comes, but they will not turn anyone away if you can't afford a donation. And with that, it is noon. You're tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. We are community radio for East Central Illinois, and it's time for Shruti, Music of India.